First, I would like to invite Mr. Kowalski, professor at the University of Economics in Poznań, Poland, to tell you more about the current economic trends, and I hope it will introduce us to the, I would say, to more global vision and how we can find ourselves and our associations, companies in the current. Please.
Thank you very much. First of all, I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me to present an overview of current economic trends. Of course, we are very much concerned with financial matters that we observe since the mid of August. But what I would like to do, I would like to share your attention not only on financial matters that are so difficult now, and everybody is slightly afraid of the future in terms of the situation of the financial markets, but I would also like to shed some light on current trends in the real economy. So I will divide my time between the real economy stuff and financial markets and try to answer what are the major features of the current situation. Any analysis of current trends has to do with globalization. That would be point number one, and I will try to look slightly deeper into the problem of globalization that is an environment for all of you. Then I would focus your attention on the accumulation of disequilibria. I would argue that currently this is the major feature of the environment, economic environment you have to deal with. Then, of course, any episode of globalization was linked to political climate. And we have to remember that without a friendly political climate, economic transformation wouldn't be possible, and all global processes would be disrupted. So we are on a pretty thin ice as far as the general economic processes are concerned. Number four is the prominent role of emerging market economies. Not everybody sees it as the dominant force, but I would argue that the emerging markets, and in particular the BRIC group, that is Brazil, Russia, India, and China, are dominating step by step the economic arena, and more such countries will follow. There is an even new term which is called Next 11 that comprises of Indonesia, Malaysia, Pakistan, Nigeria. And of course, if we agree that disequilibria is the major feature of the current situation, I would argue that without real involvement of China, the current global disequilibria will not be solved in a smooth way. Looking at globalization, we may take a historical perspective and combine the three recent episodes of globalization. As you see, the recent one is the most pronounced, both in terms of new consumers, new investors entering the global market, and in terms of the size of the GDP that was added to the global context. Of course, it has a lot of implications, both as far as the supply side is concerned and as far as the demand side is concerned, mainly raw materials and oil. Not everybody knows that emerging markets, they are already dominating the global arena in terms, of course, of population. This is the major part of the world as far as the size of population. Previous next consumers, prospective consumers, and in terms of foreign reserves, we should remember that collectively East Asian countries, they control most of foreign reserves, mainly American dollars. So the real power in terms of solving the problem of current disequilibria lies with the, in the hands of Chinese National Bank and major investors in China. Look also at the importance of oil consumption. They are future consumers. If China and India will follow the pattern of developed countries, the demand for oil will be even bigger, and the current level of prices we are accepting will be pretty low if we take into consideration the future potential of this group. What are the main driving forces of globalization? I would argue that we have at least two major forces. This is lower tariffs and lower costs of communication and transportation. This is a textbook Balassa-Samuelson effect. Along with liberalization and lower cost of transformation, you have a growing flows of trade. Now, over 29, the total imports share in the global GDP is about 29%. So almost 30% of the global GDP goes through trade. We all imagine how important is the foreign trade for all economies, not only small open economies, but also for other economies as well. There is a huge competition on the global level in terms of taxation. There is a clear tendency, a clear trend for lowering taxation. This is particularly seen here. And I want to provoke you. If we remember that corporate income tax revenue divided by average GDP is about 3 to 4%, then I wouldn't exclude the possibility that in some countries there will be a decision not to collect any corporate income taxation. So that would be less opportunity for advisors, because most of this service goes to this area. And if we see this, and if we remember that only 3 to 4% of GDP is collected through corporate income tax, so that would be as far as some developing countries are concerned, that would be a very wise decision just to abandon corporate income taxation and replace it with other effective sources of taxation. That might be excise taxation or VAT. Of course, very strange idea, but I would say feasible. If you compare this 3% revenue with the cost and disruption that is caused by this way of taxing corporations. Another trend, economic trend, we have to be aware of. This is this huge increase of oil prices that actually started in 1999 and continues till now. This is the current level of oil prices. 2 points, just only 2 points. The first is that if we compare this episode with the earlier episodes, we see that this is unique, because for the first time since 1970, this is a prolonged tendency for oil prices to go up. Earlier, prices of oil, they went up and then stabilized. They went up or then go down. Now, we have, since 1999, we have a prolonged period of oil, high oil oil prices. Of course, it created a very new situation for oil exporting countries. The wealth was transferred to oil exporting countries, and this is very well seen if we look at the terms of trade of oil exporting countries. The power, the purchasing power, the power in terms of the reserves they held stays with oil exporting countries. How capital flows. just in opposition to textbooks we used to study. In international standard textbooks, we read that capital is exported by developed countries, and the return on capital in developing countries is higher. That's why they attract a lot of capital. This is not true nowadays. The states totally dominate the market for capital. The Americans, they import over 65% of all imports of capital. That's why I talked about these equilibria that have been accumulated in the world that are unsustainable. Who is the most, who exports the most? Of course, Japan, this is a traditional supplier of capital. But then number two, probably now, that would be number one, we have China, a country that is able to save up the biggest size of its GDP. And of course, it is unable to reinvest it at home and has to export to other destinations. And then we have Saudi Arabia, a traditional supplier of capital, and a new very important player, Russia. I have to speed up. What is new as far as economic policy environment is concerned? We have two major tendencies. The first is the short-term relation between unemployment and inflation has been flattened. Just compare the situation in the States and in the euro area. It has been flattened. And what is more important, and you see in your consultancy work, the level of inflation globally is very low. Inflation globally is on a historical low level. Will it continue? I doubt. Now we have a tendency for a low and stable inflation, but with the current situation and with oil being that expensive for quite a long time, we should or you should assume slightly higher general inflation level, not only in the European arena, but also globally. And the second tendency, a second trend, is low real interest rates. Why? There was oversupply of capital, mainly from oil exporting countries and from China. And there was an American Fed policy of low interest rates. If we combine it together, you have had the lowest real interest level in the recent history. The environment was very friendly for all investments. What went wrong and how it happened in the States, and what can we expect from this major economy? Another trend, very important and probably not seen by everybody, there was a huge and consistent tendency in all developed economies to consume more. Consumption was the major driving force of development in many countries, mainly in the States. And one of the signs of this consumer-driven development was the private consumption expenditure as a percentage of household disposable income. Look, we started from a decent level of about 86% in 1975, and we've approached the level of over 97% nowadays. How is it possible? How was it possible? Most of the American consumption was financed by Chinese people who are eager or who are able or who had to invest in the States because of foreign trade surplus. So there are, this is interesting probably, there are some estimations that if it were not the Chinese exports of savings, the American interest rate would be higher by 2 percentage points. Why Americans
were so, or are, or used to, because there is a change, used to be very pro-consuming. Why they were so eager to consume? I think one of the answers is the pattern of their business cycle. If you look at the data telling about the variants of business cycle changes, you see that it is, since the beginning of the 80s, it is very low. If households in the States got a perception that the business cycle is very stable, that the frequency and the amplitude of changes is very low, they lost a perception of uncertainty and they started to consume instead of trying to choose between saving and consumption. So I would argue that one of the reasons why Americans overconsumed was the pattern of their business cycle. Very stable. In the 90s, that was the longest period of expansion in the American history, and the standard deviation of output in the States was the lowest. You see the data. It was translated. This good news was translated into American housing market, and you see probably also one of the longest period of expansion in the American American housing market. And now we see the hard landing. This is the hard landing because, as always with the business cycle, if there is too much activity, then there are some elements of the business picture that are coming into picture, and there are changes for a new situation. I would argue that we used to have the following scenario that describes what has happened in the American market and that had an impact on the British market and other markets as well. First of all, as I told you, we used to have a very low level of interest rates, so there was an excess of liquidity. And then the banks, they had to sell. They had to sell services. So step by step, they entered the subprime sector. They would never do it if they were not over liquid. So then we entered this current size, this current moment where we have all credit spreads widened because of uncertainty. And this is probably a question for some of you or most of you. You have problems how to appraise, how to assess risks on the financial market on both sides, lenders and borrowers. What will be the adjustment in the American market? I think this is the very probable pace of changes. Decrease of house prices, it has already happened. Less starts up, I've already showed you. Less borrowing, higher propensity to save, higher saving rate, and fall in residential investment, another fall. What did the Fed do in mid-September? It cut the interest rate in order to save the American economy. Actually, they had no choice but to do it. Please remember that central banks now are in a very strange situation. They used to fight inflation. We got used to very low inflation, so the central banks started to be worried about financial markets as well. But some would argue that the Fed, acting on the 18th of September, was trying to redress its own mistakes. This figure shows the possibility that Fed did mistakes already at the end of the 2001, the beginning of 2002, with too low interest rates, and was late to increase interest rates later. What are options. Two, actually. The first is the option we are studying now. The markets are clearing and trying to rebalance the disequilibria I've been talking about. And the second one is coordination. Look at what is happening now. These are the four major currencies that dominate the financial markets. And let's look at the Chinese currency. The Chinese central government and the Chinese central bank tries to not to let the renminbi appreciate. So through the intervention, central bank interventions, and some lack of liberalization of capital flows, they are able to keep the currency stable. Euro is appreciating because everybody who can